Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Artie Alberts. Welcome, Artie. I'm so glad to have you with me.
I'm glad to be here.
The first question that I want to ask you is about your name, because Artie is an interesting name, but that's not your given name. Can you tell us what that is and a little bit of the story, maybe, if you know it?
I absolutely do know it. One of the last good conversations I had with my mother several years ago, she told me my real name is Ardyce, A-R-D-Y-C-E, and my parents had, they had listened to some missionaries talk, and they had a lot of children. And they went down their list of children, and Artist was in there. And that's what my dad chose. My parents had seven children, and so they were looking for a different name, I guess.
And that will fit in perfectly in just a moment. But first of all, where were you actually born?
I was born in my parents' home in central Ohio. Near London, Ohio, which is, I believe, south of Columbus, in a little farmhouse.
And you said what, you have six siblings?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you fit in the family?
I am number three. So I have three brothers and three sisters. So four against three.
And is there a fairly large span from the oldest to the youngest?
We are pretty much 2 years apart. My mother had a miscarriage between my sister and I, so we're 4 years apart. And then she had a birth that was a stillbirth, was the last baby. So she had eight babies, but one did not survive. And I was probably 12 when that child was born. So I remember that, and we had a funeral, and I remember what he looked like and everything. So it's like he's a part of the family. His name was Jonathan.
So he was simply born not alive?
Yes, he died during birth because he had a cord around the neck, and she was ill during that pregnancy, and she was probably about 40 years old at that point. So she was older, and I know she was in bed a lot during that pregnancy because I remember making bread and she was telling me the recipe and I was making the bread. So it's a memory that I have of my mom and that time.
But it sounds like you said, he was given a name and a burial, and so it wasn't like it was hidden. It was just one of the things that happened.
Yes. She was in the hospital. Yeah, so that was in Minnesota. We had moved to Minnesota. My dad was pastoring a small Mennonite church there in the country. So she was a ways from home. And I remember several of us, I guess it was my brother and sister and I, and maybe my younger brother that actually sang to her while she was recuperating after that miscarriage. So it was at least 30 miles from our house to the hospital.
So you just answered another one of my questions, which is, did you just grow up on that little farm in Ohio? But apparently you didn't. Tell me a bit of that story. Did you move around a lot? Or
my dad was probably, let's see, he would have been about, I was thinking 28 or so when I was born. And he was in that era when a lot of the young men from Ohio were having a spiritual kind of awakening in the Mennonite church. And some of them had been raised Amish. My dad was actually raised Amish, but he was never Amish himself. But they would go to Bible school up in Holmes County during the week and be home on the weekend, I believe, something like that. He was gone part of the time and then he would be home. And he did painting and he did farming during this time. From the time I was born until I was three, when I was three, the family moved to Minnesota, central Minnesota, from central Ohio to central Minnesota. And then he started a mission church there at Leader, Minnesota. And we lived there for 14 years. When I graduated from high school, my dad answered a call to Glendive, Montana. So they moved to Montana after I was out of high school. So,
do you know how they ended up in central Minnesota? I mean, was there already a small community there that was calling a pastor, or were they connected to some kind of a conference? Do you know anything about?
They were under the North Central Conference, and they were looking for places to start Mennonite outreaches. So Leader was one. Monaga, Minnesota was another small country church. And we were about, I would say, 35 miles from Monaga. That was our nearest Mennonite church. And our church was probably, I remember seeing on the board up there, we'd have 36 to probably 48 or so people attending. That included Sunday school and church. And there were several other families. The Huffers were from Indiana. I know they were there for a term as well. And that's another family, you know. And then the Gerald Kramers came from Nebraska for a time as well with their family. And they all farmed. And my dad was a farmer also, but he was the pastor. And he was paid like, I don't know, I think $50 a month by the conference for pastoring the church. And not only did he just pastor that church, but we had outlying Bible schools. So we had, in the summertime, we had VSers come. And we had a farm on one side of the road, and then we also bought a small farm on the other side of the road. So we had a little farmhouse there. So there was enough room to house a VS unit. And so they did some help with the Bible schools. And one of those people who came to help us was Leroy Chupp's sister-in-law, Pat. I forget her last name, but she married Leroy Chupp's brother, Sam, I believe. So that was kind of the way we did all this. And we would have Bible school for 2 weeks in one area. And then we would have Bible school 2 weeks north and south, and then at our church. So we had three Bible schools during the summer. And my mother, she was really overworked, and she did show some stress. So anyway, she continued having children as well. And all of these people in and out, and it was kind of a zoo. When we look back and talk about it, we just don't know how she did it. I mean, she had a Ringer washing machine, and we hung wash on the line. And yeah, we did have one of the first bathrooms in the community. Yeah, we had a bathroom, and it flushed.
Indoors.
Indoor bathroom. But I remember when we first moved there that we did have an outhouse. So I know we did. I remember doing that. So I'm old, see. That's part of the joys of being 76. There's so many years to remember.
It's very true. So your father's real, what brought in the income was the farm. And then yeah, he was also the pastor. I have a very similar story. My father was a carpenter. So if you listen to my recent episode, you'll hear that we have a very similar story in terms of those small churches that our fathers were called to pastor. I'm guessing that you went to public school?
I did. And my dad was on the school board too. So it was a small school. It was about a mile from our house. And I went first through sixth grade there. I did actually do 2 years in one. My teacher in the second grade thought I should be in the third grade, so she moved me to third grade. And our teachers were not necessarily college graduates. They were a little bit like your mother-in-law, Viola, but they had teacher training. So 1 year or 2 years, and maybe they were working toward a degree, but they could teach at these small schools. So I was able to listen to all of the classes. And it was interesting. And I think I had read every book in the little library we had. It was nice.
So was this just a one-room schoolhouse for grades one to six?
It was one room. And we had a coal stove in the back. I mean, you read stories about this, but we actually did. We had to bring the coal in every morning. Somebody had that job and get the fire started. Usually the fire was going. The teacher got it started before school.
But you're in Minnesota and it's cold there.
It is. And we had an outhouse at the school. It was an outhouse for her.
So what happened after sixth grade? Where did you go then?
Then I went to the school in Staples, Minnesota, and that was a bus ride of about almost an hour.
One way?
Yeah, maybe 45 minutes to an hour. And yeah, seventh grade, I went to, and it was a 7 through 12 high school. My brother actually taught at that high school for many years and retired after that. He was a coach and a teacher. And he was recently honored in their Hall of Fame. In fact, it was just last week, I think.
So did you have extracurricular activities at this high school? Was it big enough for that kind of thing?
It could have been. And my oldest brother, he's 6 years older than I, he played on the football team and he played on the basketball team. But girls did not do that. We could not do that. And I don't remember any extracurricular activities that we had. But I did take Spanish in high school. But they only gave us 2 years of Spanish. But it was, I think there were 14 in my class. So I felt like we did really well. I had a really good teacher and we gave speeches in Spanish and all of that. Yeah, and I sang in the choir. I guess that might have been an extracurricular, but it was really within the curriculum. So,
and it would happen during the day when you were already there in school.
Right.
As opposed to like an evening or late afternoon.
Yeah, so yeah, we pretty much got on the bus and went home and did our home chores.
Were there any subjects, well, you talked about Spanish, but were there other subjects that were of interest to you or that you started to say, this looks interesting during those high school years?
I was always interested in math and science. So I took every math course they had, which they did not have calculus, but I took, you know, geometries and algebras and then chemistry and physics and all of that. I wanted to be a nurse already. So I was kind of cued in that direction. And my mother urged me to, go take math and take science. And so I liked those subjects. And yeah.
After you graduated from high school, what came next and how did you make that decision?
Oh, you know, with a large family as we had, we did not go. My brother was the only one that went to Goshen College for one semester, and he lived with my aunt and uncle, and he just did not like it. So he came home and went to Concordia College, and he must have gotten some help from my parents, but my parents did not have a lot of money. And so my sister had decided to go to a nursing school in Columbus, Ohio, and I followed her little footsteps. She was 4 years older than I, but she had been to Glenwood Springs, Colorado for her BS. So she did her BS right out of high school. And then she found this Grant Hospital School of Nursing. So I just kind of followed her. And so she was in the year ahead of me in school. So it was a 3-year nursing program at that time. And yeah, I was 17 when I went to nursing school in Columbus. But we had family, aunts and uncles and grandparents in the Plain City area. So they would come and get us on weekends and we could go out to their place. We didn't go every single weekend, but we went frequently out to Sharon Mennonite Church, and that was their home church. And my grandparents were there and quite a few aunts and uncles. So I never lived close to my cousins. So we had a lot of cousin times, and that's the time I really got to visit with my cousins and stuff. So I was 17 through, I graduated from nursing school when I was 20. So young.
And was that an RN, or what was your degree?
It was an RN, and then I had to come back and take my state boards in Montana, where my parents had moved. So I took my state boards, and then I didn't get my degree until 1985. So I got my nursing degree in 1985.
Your actual BSN.
BSN, yeah.
So when you were at the school in Columbus, were you living in a dorm? What was your housing situation?
We lived in the nurse's dorm, and it was about a block from the hospital. So it was Grant Hospital, and then, you know, the students were really kind of part of their staff, really. We took the place of staff. So we didn't get paid, but that's why our tuition was low, because we were working there. But I did work in the gift shop as well for like spending money and stuff like that.
And during those 3 years, was there a specific part of nursing that you decided was something you were really interested in, one of the different kind of specialties? What was that like for you?
I guess I really liked obstetrics, although the obstetrics at that time was not that good. You know, they put people under anesthesia, and we gave them twilight sleep we were using at the time. So I kind of liked it, but it wasn't until I went to VS, and I was in Aibonito at the Aibonito Mennonite Hospital, Hospital Mennonita in Aibonito, Puerto Rico, after I graduated. And that's when I enjoyed OB and nursery more. But I liked all of it. I just liked it, hospital nursing at that time.
So you graduated, you went to Montana, took your state boards, passed mm-hmm. them, and then?
Well, it was spring of that next year. I went to VS in Elkhart. We had an orientation. I'm pretty sure I had actually requested Puerto Rico, because I spoke Spanish and I was interested in that.
So that's where you went, to Puerto Rico.
And there were, I think, four in our orientation group that went to Puerto Rico. One person was a mechanic, and I mean, they had a radio person. So they had a radio station in Aibonito. They transmitted over HCJB from, I think that was in Venezuela or Colombia or someplace. Lester B. Hershey had a program there, a Mennonite preaching broadcast, and he lived in Puerto Rico. And so that program was called Lucy Verdad. And they had a choir that sang, and Bill sang in the choir, in the Lucy, they called it the Lucy Choir, Lucy Verdad.
And Lucy Verdad is?
Light and Truth. So that was one of the radio technicians then did all of that recording and broadcasting, and that was kind of his specialty.
So he was in that same orientation with you. Is
yeah.
this through Mennonite Board of Missions?
It was under Mennonite Board of Missions and Charities at that time, MBSC.
And this was going to be a 2-year assignment?
Yes, 2 years.
Did you live in a unit house? What was your housing situation there?
Yes, we lived in a large unit house that used to belong to Dr. Troyer. It was in Aibonito. It was just on the, I think, on the south end of town. It was a large house, and then there was a little casita down below. So there were 20 of us, and we had unit leaders. And so the girls slept upstairs, and some of the guys slept in the basement. And just the unit leaders slept on the first floor. And then in the casita, several boys lived. So yeah, there were a number of us, and Bill would drive a school bus out to Puguillas, Betania Mennonite School. So there were teachers there too. And so Vivian Heading's sister was also there. She was a teacher at Betania at that time.
So it sounds like there was quite a little Mennonite hub there
yep.
that then they brought in volunteers to help run the various organizations. And you've mentioned this Bill person a couple of times. Those of us who know that he's your husband.
Right. I guess that's what happens in Mennonite voluntary service. You meet your husband there.
Had you dated very much before then?
No, I didn't know him until he was there a year before, maybe a year and a half before I came. So,
but I mean, before you even met him, just generally speaking.
Oh, had I dated? Some, not a lot. Yeah, I was just 20. I guess I turned 21 when I went down there. So, you know, I was probably the youngest in the unit.
So Bill was also another volunteer. It's just that he had already been there for a year.
Yeah.
So there were in that same house with you or?
Yeah, he lived in the basement. So yeah, we lived together before we were married. We shared meals and washed dishes and, you know, and we had a big dining room because there were a lot of us. So yeah, we had to take turns washing dishes and we got to know each other washing dishes.
So what was it? I mean, there were obviously a lot of other young men around. Can you tell us sort of what it was about Bill? Tell us a bit of that story.
Well, he had a really good sense of humor and he was a new person in the Mennonite church. He hadn't been in the Mennonite church a whole long time. And he had gotten, I mean, he almost went to jail instead of going into voluntary service. So a lot of the volunteers there had been in Mennonite education a lot. And I guess we were kind of not. We hadn't. I grew up out of Mennonite communities, and so did he. I mean, he wasn't involved. And so I don't know if that was a reason, but we kind of didn't always fit in real well with everyone else. But I would say as a unit, we got along pretty well. He learned how to play rook and I learned how to play rook. Yeah.
The prerequisites for being in a VS unit at that time, at least.
So.
How soon after you got there did the two of you sort of start to connect?
I would say probably 6 months, 6 months into, yeah.
So did he only have like six more months after you started to date?
Yeah, he soon left after we didn't date a long time before he left.
He finished out his 2 years and then
his
left.
2 years, yeah.
And where did, he went home? Where was home?
His home was in Albany, Oregon. He was in Oregon, yeah.
Tell me a bit about nursing there. You said you discovered that you really did love being a nurse and being an OB.
Yeah, it was a small hospital. I think it was about 40 or 50 bed hospital, but a very active OB unit. Oh my goodness. We would have 4 and 5 deliveries a day sometimes. On a shift, we might have 3. I mean, we couldn't have done that every single day. But sometimes it was very busy. And also the emergency room was super busy. And we had a big nursery. There were probably, yeah, so I said it was a 40-bed hospital, but we also had the nursery besides, which was at least, we could house 15 of those. So it was busy. And at that time, Dr. Ron Graber was our surgeon. And they were volunteers as well. Well, Ron wasn't, but other doctors came that were Mennonites. And so there was like it was a real team effort there. I just felt like, you know, the nurses and the doctors were just part of the team and we just made it work, you know? And I think it was a really good experience to start nursing on that team basis.
So we're almost out of time already, which is just crazy, but we need to, I'm going to assume that after your 2 years, then you left as well.
Yes. And I went back to my parents' house, but then I came out to Oregon because we had been writing letters and pretty fast and furiously. And so when I came out, he was just starting school. Well, he had started school already. And we decided to just get married out here. I was going to have my dad marry us, but no, we couldn't wait that long. So we were married and then we lived in Central Oregon for a couple of years.
So now we just need to rush ahead and get you to Portland. When did you come to Portland and why?
We spent 30 years in Roseburg. Bill was teaching. I nursed. I did OB-GYN, and then I worked in maternal child. And then I started working in public health, and I worked there the last 7 years. And so, yeah, did a lot of clinics, and now I volunteer with public health. So we moved up here because my son and his wife were living here, and they had their first baby. And since we were both retired, I quit my part-time job, and we just moved up. And that's how we got here. So I've been taking care of children for the last 14 years.
So that's how long you've been here.
Yes. 14 years.
And how many grandchildren?
Just the two boys are 14-year-old, and then the other one is 9.
When you came to Portland, was Portland Mennonite sort of the first church that you checked out, or were there others in between, or?
Pretty much, we came to Portland Mennonite right away. We did visit a couple of other churches, but the Mennonite church seemed kind of home. And even though we'd been out of the Mennonite church for 34 years, I mean, we went to the Alliance Church in Roseburg, and we were active there. But the Alliance Church here did not feel, yeah, anyway. We felt we weren't home at the Portland Mennonite church, so we just stayed.
And you've been there ever since.
We have.
What if some of the things that you've done at Portland Mennonite, I know you still sing, right?
I try. My voice is not as good as, it's not as strong and it's not as high as it used to be. And I think it's gotten worse during COVID because I'm not singing as much. And so that's the other thing. And pretty much I did teach Sunday school for a couple of years and was active on a few committees.
And just on a personal note, I have to say thank you for the years that you picked up my mother-in-law, Viola Nussbaum, and brought her to church for such a long time, especially in these last years as her health was not good. And we live on the other side of town, so it was just so much appreciated that you did that amazing service of bringing her to church and taking her home. So just a public thank you for that.
Well, you know, I always thought of my mom because she was a little older than Viola, but I thought of my mother and I thought I would like to have somebody taking her to church. And so that was just kind of my working out my mother, I guess. And we enjoyed Viola. She was just her own unique personality. So it was good. A little variety and a little diversity is always good.
And I know she greatly appreciated that as well. So thank you from her as well. Well, Artie, thank you for this little glimpse into your amazing life. So glad that you were able to share that with us.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it too.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.